We're on the internet now. We can hear you, Gary, so we'll go ahead and do roll call. First of all, on the lines today is Julie Mirren and Deb Maxlin.
Julie Mirren and Deb McLean.
McLean.
And Walter Peek from Communication Access Center for Deaf and Hard of Hearing.
Okay. Mary Sissick.
Rich Helsper and Brookings appearing on behalf of Mary Sissick.
Okay.
Kim Peterson from Otter Tail Power Company.
Okay, Kim. How about Tal Wazorek from Sprint?
Yes, I'm on, Commissioner.
Okay, how about Don Peterson?
Yes, Commissioner, I'm on with Jody Odegaard-Smith.
Okay. And Kenneth Gates from Dakota Energy.
I'm on, Commissioner. Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else that their name I have not called, or are you on the line?
Commissioner Colbeck, this is Meredith Moore appearing on behalf of Interstate Telecommunications Cooperative.
Okay. And you're on my list. I just never said your name. Thank you, Meredith. Anyone else? Okay. Today we will start our agenda with the approval of the minutes. We have previously seen the minutes. If there are no changes, I'll move that we approve those. Commissioner Johnson?
Aye.
Commissioner Hansen?
Aye.
And I vote aye. Second on the agenda is the status report for Consumer Utility Inquiries. Ms. Deb Gregg.
Thank you, Commissioner Colbeck. The Commission has received a total of 115 contacts since the last report was prepared for the May 6, 2008 Commission meeting. 25 of the contacts involve telecommunication services, 22 of the contacts involve electrical services, 9 contacts involve natural gas services, 10 contacts involve cell phone service, 24 contacts related to the Do Not Call Registry, and 25 contacts related to issues not regulated by the PUC. 852 of the 905 complaints received in 2008 have been resolved, and 2,300 of the 2,337 complaints received in 2007 have been resolved.
All right. Thank you. Any questions?
Ms. Gregg, either at the home shows or on the phone, have you heard much concern from people about the digital TV transition?
I did have a lot of comments about that the last ARP in Sioux Falls, that a lot of people are having trouble. They're getting the voucher from the FCC, but they're not being able to get it filled at the local businesses because they're only getting so many in. So I did hear a lot of that from the older people that have the older TVs.
So it's not that the storefronts aren't honoring them. It's just that they don't have the inventory to respond.
Right. I guess they're only supposed to they order so many, and just by the FCC said you have to have so many on hand, and so there's more vouchers out there than there is equipment. So then they will not make a list. So.
Sounds like good central planning.
Yes.
Economic central planning. Great.
Okay. Any other questions? All right, moving on to the electric docket, EL07-011. We will move that docket. If there are no objections, we'll move that docket to the end of the agenda. That is for a proposed energy efficiency partnership plan. So we'll move that to the end of the agenda. Okay, any objections? All right. So let's start out here with EL08-009. In the matter of a joint request for electric service rights exception between Otter Tail Power and Wheatstone Valley Electric Co-op. Otter Tail has requested a withdrawal of the filing. So first we'd like to hear from Otter Tail, the moving party. The question today is, shall the commission grant the withdrawal of the filing? Mr. Gertis.
Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, my name is Dave Gertis. I'm a lawyer from Pier, and I represent Otter Tail Power. This is one of those situations where the customer got the power he needed from an REA that was closer than Otter Tail, and Otter Tail, it was power to a irrigation pivot is what was involved, and Otter Tail asks this be withdrawn because the customer is receiving power.
Okay. So let's see. Anyone else want to comment on this? If not, questions? Staff?
Thank you, Commissioner. We would just recommend granting withdrawal.
Okay. Commissioner, questions?
So, Mr. Gertis, at one time there was an agreement between Whetstone Valley and Otter Tail Power to have a service rights exception, and ultimately that they just decided not to follow through on that agreement?
What happened was that the commissioner didn't want to wait for the commission to take action on this, and so the customer took matters into his own hands and just dealt directly with the REA. So,
but this is in Wheatstone service territory, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it's in Wheatstone.
Wheatstone's right. Okay, great, thanks.
Any other questions from commissioners? Seeing none, I'll move that the commission in EL08-009 grant the withdrawal of the filing. Any discussion? Commissioner Johnson?
Aye.
Commissioner Hansen?
Aye.
And I'll vote aye. In the matter of EL08-012, in the matter of the joint request for electrical service rights exception between Otter Tail Power Company and Kingsbury Electric Cooperative, Mid-State Agronomy requests temporary service from Kingsbury Electric Cooperative until the completion of Otter Tail extending its facilities to customer and other new customer areas. The moving party, Otter Tail.
Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, my name is Dave Gertis. I'm a lawyer from Pier, and I'm still representing Otter Tail. This is another an arrangement between Otter Tail and Kingsbury Electric. This customer is outside the city limits, as I understand it, and there's kind of an interesting manner of hooking him up on this lot that's along the side of the highway. And so Otter Tail and Kingsbury Electric have agreed to a service rights exception until Otter Tail can extend its facilities.
Anyone from Kingsbury Electric Cooperative? How about Mid-State Agronomy? Staff?
Thank you, Commissioner. We would just recommend approval of the service rights exception.
Okay. Questions from commissioners?
Mr. Gertis, I remember the word temporary in the filing. I don't remember if there was any sort of a rough timeline of what temporary probably meant. Do you have any idea?
Until they can extend the service, and I think it's a matter of, like, less than a half mile. It's like 600 and some odd feet or something like that. It's just outside the city limits, as I
recall. This is in conjunction with another development, so, you know, as construction, most efficient way to construct it, and, it's hard to pin that down due to weather or whatever is happening there. So.
Any other questions by commissioners? Motion?
Mr. Chairman, I would move the commission approve the temporary service rights exception.
Discussion? Hearing none, all in favor? Commissioner Johnson?
Aye.
Commissioner Hansen?
Aye.
And I'll vote aye. Motion passes. In HP 0 Hydrocarbon Pipeline, HB 07-001. A motion was by TransCanada for approval of a construction bond was filed by Keystone on April 30th. The public liaison was approved on May 6, 2008. Today, the question before the commission is, shall the commission grant the motion for approval of a construction bond? Mr. Smith, did you want to comment first, or Mr. Gertis?
I think we'll let Mr. Gertis. He's the movement here. Okay. See what he has to say.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, I'm now Dave Gertis representing TransCanada Pipeline, the Keystone Pipeline Project. We've been working feverishly to try to get this bond here and filed with the Commission. Part of the problem, unbeknownst to me, was yesterday was a holiday in Canada, and things didn't get done quite as quickly as they should. We do not have the bond. I talked to Mr. Smith about it, and there are a couple of little potential bumps in the road, and Mr. Smith would like to defer this, and I agree, until we actually have the bond in hand and it can be filed and we can look at the bond and ask for its approval. So we hope that we can do an ad hoc meeting sometime this week when the commissioners are available, subject to Mr. Smith looking at the bond and agreeing with it. So that's where we are. And so we ask if you would defer this, please.
Do we need action on the deferral or just a no action?
I think that's up to you guys. Lately, you've been moving and doing it, so that's official action then.
I'll move that we defer action on HB07-001 until further information is gathered. Discussion? Commissioner Johnson.
Aye.
Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
And I'll vote aye. All right, into the telecommunications portion of our docket. In TC07-134, in the matter of Deltel Incorporated, doing business as Auction Funds, failure to submit a report and pay of the gross receipts tax. The certificate of authority for Deltel Incorporated was revoked at the hearing. Deltel has paid its gross receipts tax, and the question today is, shall the commission reinstate the certificate of authority for Deltel doing business as Auction Phone? The moving party, Auction Phone?
Actually, Mr. Commissioner, this would be a staff recommendation.
Oh, staff, okay. We'll go right to staff.
If I may. Commissioners, we revoked the certificate of authority for Deltel, Inc. at our February 26, 2008 hearing. There was a crossing of paths in the mail, and we do have the check for their gross receipts tax filing. And so we would just recommend that the commission reinstate the certificate of authority for Deltel, Inc. doing business as Auction Phone.
Questions by commissioners?
If I may.
Sure.
Forney, has Deltel been dilatory in getting their payments to us in the past?
Mr. Commissioner, in the past, Deltel was perfectly, they were satisfying all of our requirements, and so this would have been the first time that they had been up for revocation.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome. Any other questions? Hearing none, action?
Mr. Chairman, I'll move that the commission reinstate the COA for Deltel.
Discussion. Hearing none, Commissioner Johnson?
Aye.
Commissioner Hansen?
Aye.
And Commissioner Kobach votes aye. Motion passes. Item number 2 in TC08-039 in the matter of the application of Kentucky Data Link for a certificate of authority to provide inter-exchange telecommunication service and local exchange services in South Dakota. KDL's application is for the authority to provide resold and facilities-based local exchange access, and inter-exchange telecommunication services throughout the service territory of Quest Corporation. KDL requests confidential treatment of its financial information. The question today is, shall the commission grant a certificate of authority to Kentucky Data Link Incorporated? KDL is the moving. Is there anyone representing them? Hearing none, staff?
Thank you, Chairman. This is Harlan Best. Staff would recommend that the commission grant a certificate of authority for local and IXC authority to Kentucky Data Link. They have filed in accordance with our administrative rules. Staff had a couple of questions. The company responded very promptly to those questions. Staff would recommend that the financials be treated as confidential and subject to rural safeguards.
Okay, questions from commissioners? I have one. Harlan, is this a run-of-the-mill COA that we're going to restrict prepaid calling cards and all of that also?
Well, their financials are very strong. They do not need to have any type of restrictions.
Any other questions from commissioners? Action?
I move the commission grant the COA subject to rural safeguards and that we provide confidential treatment to the financial information.
All right. Discussion. Commissioner Johnson.
Aye.
Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
And Commissioner Kobach votes aye. Item number 3 in TC08-042 in the matter of the filing by Access Transmission Services, doing business as Verizon Access Transmission Services, for approval of its access services tariff. AT&T Communications of the Midwest Court filed a petition for intervention. Now today, shall the commission grant intervention to AT&T Communications of the Midwest is the question. The moving party?
Thank you, Commissioner. Bill Van Camp, I'm in State Council for AT&T Communications of the Midwest. AT&T has moved for intervention in this docket as a result of MCI Metro Access Transmission Services LLC filing what it's called transmittal number 08-1, tariff number 2. The original requested effective date was May 22nd, but I believe a filing was received last week, pushing that back into June. For the commission's information, and it is in our filing, there is ongoing discussion at a national level between Verizon and AT&T regarding some of the issues in this docket and the tariff itself. At this point, though, AT&T wishes to intervene to reserve its interests and rights. AT&T, is, as you know, is an inter-exchange carrier in South Dakota and would be adversely affected by this tariff were it to be approved. And there are several issues relating to the ambiguity in the tariff and bundling of services that AT&T wishes to review along with commission staff and Verizon as a party to the docket.
Thank you. Anyone from Verizon wish to speak? Hearing none, staff? Oh, there you are. I didn't see you moving fast enough. Sorry, Mr. Grudas.
Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, Dave Gertis representing Verizon Business, and Verizon Business has no objection to the intervention.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Gertis. Anyone from staff?
Thank you. This is Karen Kramer from staff, and staff would recommend granting intervention to AT&T.
Commissioner, questions? Hearing none, any action?
I will move that in PC 08-042, the commission grant intervention to AT&T.
All right, discussion. Hearing none, Commissioner Johnson?
Aye.
Commissioner Hansen?
Aye.
And Commissioner Kobach votes aye also. Item number 4, TC 08-043, in the matter of the application of Communication Access Center for the Deaf and Hard of Hearing for a certificate of authority to provide inter-exchange telecommunication services in South Dakota. CACDHH intends to provide video relay service and internet protocol relay and needs the certificate of authority in order to become eligible for reimbursement from the Interstate Telecommunications Relay Services, TRS Fund, for those services. Today the question is, shall the commission grant a certificate of authority to Communication Access Center for the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Incorporated? The moving party, CACDHH, would you like to comment?
Yes, good morning. This is Julie Myron. I'm Executive Director for Communication Access Center. And first I'd like to thank the commission for the opportunity to participate in this meeting this morning. Just to give you a little bit of background about CAC, we've been in operation for 40 years providing services and support on behalf of people who are deaf and hard of hearing. Our services now include telecommunication relay service in the form of video relay and internet protocol relay. Today we are asking that the commission approve our application for certificate of authority as it relates to these services. Again, I would like to thank you for your time and consideration and ask that the commission approve our application.
All right, thank you. Staff?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Brian Rounds for staff. Staff got questions why the FCC allows states to provide common carrier status to the TRS providers by simply granting a COA. But other states have done it, and we approved two others in 2007. And in the end, CAC provided all the required information and thus has met the commission criteria for certificate of authority and thus is as deserving as any other company in receiving a COA. Keep in mind that we issue many COAs to carriers who really never intend to provide telecommunication services to South Dakota customers. So why should CAC be any different? Therefore, I recommend the commission grant CAC an inter-exchange certificate of authority, and additionally, I recommend, and CAC has agreed, the COA contain the standard restrictions from providing any prepaid services and from accepting or collecting any deposits or advance payments. I also recommend, and CAC has also agreed, to a restriction from providing any end-user service that require end-user billing. I believe the order should limit CAC's COA to the provisioning of VRS, IP relay, or other future FCC-approved TRS services.
If CAC should ever wish to provide any end-user billed service or prepaid service or collect any advanced customer payment or deposits, they would need to seek additional commission authority.
All right. Thank you. Commissioner, questions?
Mr. Owens, as you notice, this is the third such COA we've looked at. Does this differ in any fundamental or important ways from either the first two dockets of this type?
It's exactly the same. I think one of them didn't provide IP relay services, but otherwise it's the same.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman?
Sure.
Ms. Myron, I'm just curious on a couple of points, and I don't wish to sound as if I'm opposed to this in any fashion, because I recognize that you provide an essential service, a very important one. But I am a little concerned over some of the challenges that I had heard occurring two or three years ago, where people were attempting to scam deaf persons by using the relay service, and the person who's making the relay is in a confidential position and unable to compromise themselves by entering an opinion. How has that been dealt with, and does that in any way enter into the situation that we're involved in here?
Yes, sir. That's a good question. The FCC has been monitoring that all along, and what we have done is blocking. When it usually occurs from companies overseas, like India, it'll be a call center that'll call in pretending to be deaf and then calling companies to have items shipped and then circumventing paying for those items. So we have monitored our calls, and then we will block those calls. So our rate has significantly dropped. I think we're down to about 1 or 2% of our calls are fraudulent.
I'm glad to hear that. I have a deaf niece and a TDY in our home for 20 years because of our relationship with the deaf community. And I also knew that there was an attempted scamming of deaf people through people calling the Ethiopia or whatever Nigerian type.
Yes, Nigeria also.
Right. Are you dealing with that in some fashion?
Yes, we know where those calls, when we see those calls coming in, we're able to block those also. And the FCC, when they came in to do our audit, our technology person by the name of Bill McClelland explained how we were doing it, and they were very impressed. And they asked us to help them in blocking those calls if it were possible. So we are in the process of giving them information.
Excellent. Glad to hear that. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Any other questions?
Mr. Rounds, I think the recommendation you've made, which is to not allow them to do any end-user billing, makes sense. Did we have a similar condition on the other two hard-of-hearing relay service COAs we issued?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks.
Any other questions? Hearing none, action?
Mr. Chairman, I will move that the Commission grant the COA with the standard restrictions that were recommended by staff, as well as the restrictions against providing any end-user service that results in an end-user billing. And certainly, if there's any part of that motion I missed, I'm happy to take a friendly amendment.
Discussion. Hearing none. Commissioner Johnson.
Aye.
Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
Commissioner Kovac votes aye. Motion passes. Under administration, in the matter of a consulting contract for production of outreach materials, staff is requesting approval to enter into a consulting contract with an advertising agency to assist with the development and production of outreach materials. Today, shall the Commission authorize staff to enter into a consulting contract with an advertising agency to produce outreach materials for the Do Not Call, Lifeline, and Link Up programs. We'll go right to staff. Leah?
Thank you, Commissioner Kolbeck. Leah Moore for staff. The Do Not Call, Lifeline, and LinkUp are three telecommunications programs that staff believes more South Dakota consumers can benefit from. Staff would like to conduct an awareness effort beginning this summer to promote and assist consumers with enrolling in and applying for these programs. We are working with the South Dakota Telecommunications Association to develop and implement the Lifeline and LinkUp awareness programs specifically. To effectively promote these programs, we propose a variety of tools be created, which will include print materials, television commercials, and display graphics. Many of these will be used at fairs and home shows the PUC attends. And staff requests the approval to work with an advertising agency to create the promotional materials for this outreach effort.
All right. Thank you. Commissioner, questions?
I don't have any question, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to say that Lifeline and LinkUp are extremely, of course, Do Not Call is something that makes life far more less stressful for folks, as do Lifeline and LinkUp programs. But Lifeline and LinkUp provide some real opportunities for people to be part of the telecommunications world, and I'm real pleased to see the staff's recommendation.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Jackson.
Yeah, there might be some reasonable questions about, where the source of these funds come from, because they're not a typical budget line item. So perhaps we could just turn to Ms. Forney, particularly on the Lifeline LinkUp, if you could focus on that and explain where those funds came from and sort of the history of the settlement that resulted in that.
Certainly. Commissioners, this is Heather Forney for staff. The funding for the Lifeline and LinkUp portion of this will come from our settlement with Quest and their QPAP funds. If you recall, a number of years back, we had a settlement agreement with them whereby funds, they were given authority to enter into both the long distance and the local aspect of telecommunications. And when they were given that authority, any issues they might have had with backsliding, with some of those issues, deposits would be made into funds, separate funds for us, and they could be used for payment of our portion of the audit for the QPAP and also for any outreach materials for telecommunication services in South Dakota. And so the portion of the Lifeline LinkUp contract will come from those QPAP funds. The Do Not Call will actually come from our Do Not Call fund, which is those are funds that are the deposits that are made by companies that are doing telemarketing in South Dakota. So any payments that they make go right into this fund, and we also utilize those funds for enforcement activity when we have violations on the Do Not Call list. So that's where that portion will come from.
All right. Any other questions by commissioners? Action.
Mr. Chairman, I would move the commission authorize staff to enter into that consulting contract or consulting contracts.
All right. Discussion. Hearing none, Commissioner Johnson.
Aye.
Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
And Commissioner Kolbeck votes aye also. Motion passes. All right. We'll go to the addendum. The first addendum in the matter of EL08-011, in the matter of the petition for electrical service by South Dakota Oilseed Processors, LLC, to have Northwestern Energy assigned as its electric provider in the service area of Dakota Energy Cooperative. Oilseed Processor states it is a new customer in a new location in Hand County, South Dakota, that will have contracted minimum demand in excess of 2,000 kilowatts, and request to be served electricity by Northwestern Energy pursuant to South Dakota Codified Law 4934A56. On May 14th, Dakota Energy Cooperative filed a petition for the intervention. And today the question is, shall the commission grant intervention to Dakota Energy Cooperative Incorporated and any other parties that may have filed? So first we'll look to Dakota Energy Cooperative for their comments.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Don Peterson. I'm an attorney in Mitchell, South Dakota, representing Dakota Energy. I have Jody Odegaard-Smith, one of my partners, is with me as well. We are asking to intervene in this matter for the reasons set forth in our petition for intervention. One, the proposed site of the agricultural processing facility is within the exclusive assigned service territory of Dakota Energy. Dakota Energy has been serving loads in the area for a number of years, of course. And at this point, while we're not formally objecting to Oilseeds' petition, we are concerned about what would happen in the event the project does not go forward or is started and not completed. And we're also, of course, concerned that the project does meet the 2 MW load requirements for a large load.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Any other comments? Northwestern?
Well, good morning, commissioners and staff. Brett Kaneke. I'm a lawyer from Pierre. I represent Northwestern Energy in this docket. We joined in the petition filed by Oilseed. We certainly have no objection to the Dakota Energy petition to intervene, and I know of no objection that's going to be made on behalf of Oilseed processors either.
Yes, anyone from Oilseed processors on the line? All right. Staff.
This is Karen Kramer from staff, and staff would recommend granting intervention to Dakota Energy Co-op.
Thank you. Commissioner questions? Hearing none, I'll move in the case of EL08-011 that the commission grant intervention to Dakota Energy Cooperative. Discussion? Commissioner Johnson?
Aye.
Commissioner Hanson?
Aye.
And Commissioner Kovac votes aye also. Motion passes. All right. In telecommunications, I'm still on the first addendum in the matter of TC06-178 in the matter of the application for Sprint Communications Company, LP, for authority to provide local exchange service in certain rural areas served by Brookings Municipal Utilities doing business as Swiftel. On May 13, 2008, Sprint filed a motion to request the commission enter a protective order. And today, shall the commission grant the motion to enter the protective order? First, we'll go to Sprint.
Mr. Chairman, I wonder if, just for efficiency's sake, if we shouldn't take these two dockets as well as the two dockets on the second addendum up at the same time.
Absolutely. They are both to enter a protective order. Is that...
That's fine.
That's fine. Okay, so we will also be discussing TC06-118 in the matter of the application of MCC Telephone of the Midwest doing business as MediaCom for certificate of authority to provide inter-exchange and local exchange services in the Brookings Exchange. Also, on May 13, 2008, Sprint filed a motion to request the commission enter into protective order in that order, too. And the question is the same. Shall the commission grant the motion to enter a protective order? We'll hear from Sprint first.
Thank you, Commissioner. Talbot Wysorek on behalf of Sprint. The protective orders being sought are essentially identical to those that were entered in the arbitrations between Sprint and Swiftel. The CLEC proceedings are kind of go hand in glove with that arbitration proceeding. The reason that the similar motion was filed in TC06-188 with MCC is that there's been discussions, and tentatively right now these matters are set to be heard at the same time. And so we thought the similar protective orders would be appropriate, so everybody would be operating under the same type of order.
Okay, Mr. Resorek, do you have any objection to us taking up TC06-180 and TC06-189 on the second addendum? They're for a protective order also from you.
Yeah, I don't have an objection to hearing all four at once. For the commission's information, the orders were run by all counsel before being filed. And I believe my motion represented that there's agreements between all counsel that these orders were appropriate and that everybody agreed to the entering of the orders. And so the orders on the other two dockets that deal with the ITC territories and similar types of CLEC proceedings were agreed to, and those orders are essentially identical except the different parties to the orders in TC06-178 and 188.
All right, and just for clarification, we're speaking about TC06-178, TC06, excuse me, -188, TC06-180, and TC06-189, all four of those dockets. We've heard from Sprint on the protective order. Would anyone from Swiftel like to comment first?
Mr. Chairman, this is Rich Helsper. On behalf of Brookings Municipal Utilities doing business as Swiftel, we have no objections to the proposed protective orders in 178 and 188.
All right, thank you. And anyone from ITC wish to comment? Meredith Moore?
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. This is Meredith Moore appearing on behalf of ITC. I would concur in Mr. Wazorek's comments. We did have an opportunity to review the protective order and would agree that it's necessary to proceed with discovery in this particular case and would ask that the commission adopt that protective order. Thank you.
All right. Anyone else wish to comment? And staff? Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Kinnicky.
Just briefly, Commissioner, we concur with the comments that have been made on behalf of MediaCom and would ask that you go forward. Thank you.
All right, thank you. I admitted the MediaCom on that. Anyone else? Staff.
Thank you. Kara Semler for staff. Staff recommends approval.
All right. And Commissioner, questions? All right, and... no commissioner questions and action. I'll move in the case of TC06-178, TC06-188, TC06-180, and TC06-189 that the commission grant the motion to enter into a protective order on each one of those listed dockets. Discussion. Hearing none, Commissioner Johnson?
Aye.
Commissioner Hansen?
Aye.
And Commissioner Kobach votes aye also. So that completes are the addendums and everything but the first docket on EL07-011 in the matter of the filing by Otter Tail Power Company for approval of its proposed energy efficiency partnership for 2008. On January 1, 2000, it is proposed that the programs would be launched on January 1, 2008, and is expected that the programs, including budgets and goals, would roll over into 2009 and 2010. The question today is, shall the Commission approve Otter Tail's proposed energy efficiency program, or how shall the Commission proceed? We'll first turn to Otter Tail.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Dave Gerdes, a lawyer from Pierre, and I represent Otter Tail Power Company, and I believe Kim Peterson is on the line and would be available for any questions.
That's correct. First of all, I'd like to thank everybody for the opportunity to, again, address the commission today, and specifically I'd like to thank staff for the diligent work that we've been doing together over the last few weeks since the last time we met, and I think what we've proposed is a modified version based on staff's input for an energy efficiency plan in South Dakota. The overall plan has an annual energy goal of slightly over 1 million kilowatt hours a year. Proposed budget is around $157,100 a year. We're looking for around 725 participants from our South Dakota area. And we have proposed a energy adjustment factor as part of the rider that would begin yet this year. If we launched in September, the rider would go into effect in October as a charge per kilowatt hour on South Dakota customer bills. There have been a couple of minor modifications to that rider. Mr. Rounds has suggested that according to South Dakota law, we are required to file an annual adjustment. Our rider indicates we may file, so that wording would be changed upon approval to will file. And other than that, I am open for questions that commissioners or staff may have.
All right. Staff?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Brian Rounds for staff. With regard to the programs, I'd like to thank Kim for taking our suggestions. Basically, we scaled the program back a little bit, cut a couple of the programs. We expanded the education program a little bit for the builders. We left a couple of programs the same, like the air conditioner control, residential demand control, heat pumps, motors and lighting. And then we kind of worked the grants program to be a little bit different. And so I kind of want to expand on that. Basically, the way the grant program will work now is it'll be $40,000 total in awards, with a maximum award of $10,000 apiece. And there'll be, say, like a three-month application period. And at the end of that period, Otter Tail will take all those applications and divvy up the awards based mostly on cost-benefit factor. As long as a company reaches a minimum cost-benefit factor that Otter Tail will set, they'll be basically ranked according to who has the best factor. However, there will also be a separate tier where you'll have any public entities will get first dibs on those on that money as long as they meet that minimum factor. So, I guess with respect to the plan as a whole, we still have some reservations about the plan, but we do like Otter Tail's filing as a pilot project. Otter Tail proposes to recover costs through a new energy efficiency partnership cost recovery rider. The rider will be a separate line item on each customer's bill as an additional charge of 0.063 cents per kilowatt hour. This rate is applied equally across all customer classes. The rate includes a carrying charge as well as the incentive Otter Tail estimates to achieve in the program's initial iteration. Upon approval, Otter Tail will begin implementing its programs on October 1st of this year and end the accounting period on December 31st of 2009. To adjust the following plans to follow the calendar year. To ensure that this is not an automatic adjustment, staff proposes that Otter Tail file on March 1st, 2010, and annually thereafter to approve the previous year's expenses, the following year's budget, and true up any previous miscalculations may have occurred. With that, staff recommends approval with the conditions laid out in the May 19th memo added to the tariff. Those conditions being, first, that Otter Tail file annually for approval beginning on March 1st, 2010, and second, that Otter Tail works with staff to conduct a survey to help determine the program's effectiveness. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Rounds. Questions from commissioners? I just have one quick one. I think you said 0.063, isn't it 0.00063 per kilowatt hour?
Yep, I said 0.063 cents.
Okay.
0.063 cents or $0.0063.
Gotcha. All right, and the other is, I guess, Ms. Peterson, is are you in concurrence with the staff's recommendations?
I am.
Okay. And I have a couple more. Commissioner Johnson?
I've got a slug of them, so I don't want to be a mic hog, so if you've got them...
No, go ahead.
The hot packs were removed, presumably based on staff request. Could somebody give me an idea? I mean, the numbers didn't look that bad on the hot packs. Was there a particular... I mean, they weren't as good as some of the other program offerings, but there was there a particular reason that was targeted for removal?
I think the main reason was because, number one, we didn't think they were taking free ridership into, actually that'd be number two. The main reason was probably because most of those customers we thought were probably on a reduced rate of, say, I think it was around 3 cents or lower, and that was not going to save the customers very much money, in our opinion.
So because of the low rate for electricity, really your cost benefit is... made the numbers don't look nearly as good when you run it on cheap electricity as opposed to expensive electricity. Is that right?
Right. Our calculations came out different than theirs because of that.
To Ms. Peterson, how tough was it to give up the hot packs? I mean, the staff recommendations make sense, or is this a? I mean, I know there's some efficiency to be gained just even from a purely marketing perspective to have some consistency from programs across borders. Your thoughts?
Staff's recommendation, you know, that started with the hot packs and kind of moved through a couple of other programs like the compact fluorescent lighting program. You know, we stand by behind the original numbers we filed for the hot packs and its cost effectiveness as well as the compact fluorescent program. But staff did bring up some, you know, a number of good points and concerns. On the compact fluorescent one, it was, you know, the thought that everybody is buying them already, so the utility doesn't need to incentivize, and the thought on the hot packs that the energy savings and the customer benefits perhaps just aren't of that magnitude. After complete review, I think, you know, the company still feels that those programs are appropriate, particularly in South Dakota, because we haven't had programs of that nature before in South Dakota. But at the end of the day, really wanting to be on the same page with staff and supporting, you know, what their thoughts were. Certainly we can add them later, add another year, or Ottertail would not be opposed to adding them back in should that be a commissioner recommendation as well.
Well, I may be completely wrong. I mean, I've reviewed, you know, some lit on this stuff, but certainly not exhaustively. I mean, I kind of feel, Ms. Peterson, like you need almost a critical mass of program offerings to gain the attention of a customer base. Is that your understanding as well? And if so, does the current proposal, does it get there? I mean, I just don't want to get in a situation where we dip our toe into the water and then ultimately this program isn't effective because we cut it back at the front end and then we're going to use this as proof down the road that, well, energy efficiency doesn't work here in South Dakota. Your thoughts?
Well, certainly to your point of does critical mass work, yes. And to the extent that South Dakota would benefit from the development of these programs already by another state, that's a, you know, certainly a true statement, and it does make marketing easier. The most valid point I still have for why they belong in a portfolio of programs is what drives the residential customer's energy bill? Well, it's heat. We have a program for that. That program is both the air source and ground source heat pump. And the other two big factors are water heating and lighting. And to the extent that the RDC program can help with water heating and to some degree lighting, but in a very backdoor way. When we're talking about being able to help residential customers lower their energy use and why we advocated for the hot pack program and the compact fluorescent program in the beginning was those are big contributors to energy use, water heating certainly, and lighting. So under the umbrella of making sure we've covered all the main end uses for customers, that's what we submitted. Staff's concern still being valid, taking those two out does leave an end use without an incentive plan other than, you know, just turn off your lights and use less water. The typical direction for an energy efficiency plan is, you know, to provide some kind of incentives to help customers do that.
What about on the, Mr. Chairman, if I could? Yes, please. What about on air conditioning control, Ms. Peterson? What will likely be the difference in the Minnesota and South Dakota incentive rates? I mean, you know, one part of me says, well, I don't really want to increase the cost of this program. The other part of me says, well, $2 a month times, I think he estimated, 30 participants times 12 months. I mean, I think we're talking, you know, $600 or $700. Should there be a difference in the incentive rates for Minnesota versus South Dakota customers?
I would say the short answer is no. And the reason is that the incentive is based on what avoided cost the utility has. And we can afford to or should be paying up to some number based on the cost that we're avoiding. That's why that number is increasing in Minnesota, because our summer capacity needs are becoming great. We are currently a winter peaking utility. That transition to a summer peaking utility has started. So from a utility resource planning and avoided cost scenario, the $7 a month incentive makes universal sense. If staff and commissioners are concerned about the budget, then, and the incentives for customer, then, you know, the current $5 a month, you know, is certainly less. It's going to cost a small amount overall less. But I would offer on top of that a third issue, which it, you know, creates trouble for the marketing of that. It's easier if the incentives are the same in all states.
Well, have you done any analysis, Ms. Peterson, on if your take rate changes at $7 versus $5?
No, because the we're just launching the change to $7 a month, and we have no history on it. Anecdotal evidence suggests that it will improve.
Okay. From an operational perspective, I mean, let's presume that I agree with you, and I do think that they're if it's $7 in Minnesota, it should be $7 in South Dakota. Well, it's not $7 in Minnesota right now. So from an operational perspective, either Ms. Peterson or staff, how do we, I mean, if I don't want an arbitrage, how do we get there? Mm-hmm. I mean, do we just...
That's a valid question, and Brian, I don't, if Brian's prepared to answer, I'll pause. Otherwise, I can take a shot at it, Brian.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. The reality of the South Dakota plan is, you know, with earliest we would launch September. And so typically we probably, I don't think the air conditioning program would be the first thing that we'd be marketing to South Dakota customers first. They think we're kind of crazy going into winter marketing an air conditioning program. But optimally what we would want is we'd start marketing that in January, February. We'd want to be installing receivers in March and April so we're ready for June, July, August, September heating. So I think we're okay because we wouldn't launch this fall anyway. So by the time we would receive approval in our other state, we'd have time to get everything in order in South Dakota as well.
Mr. Chairman, my inclination at this point would be if the motion is made to accept the program as outlined in the staff memo and the revised filing would be to amend that to go to $7. So I'd just let you know that now, and then I would look to, you know, staff or the applicant to see if that would cause any problems that I'm not aware of.
From our perspective, it's a modification to some numbers, but a minor detail.
I wouldn't object to that.
I've got maybe five more. I'll ask one more, and then maybe I'll pause to see if you or Commissioner Hansen have some more. I don't want to hog it too much. The notice, I guess maybe more of a request than a question. You know, if this program is approved, Ms. Peterson, I think I'd be interested just to have Otter Tail file merely for review, not for approval, but file with the commission the notice you plan to send to customers explaining the changes in the rate and their monthly bills. I'd just be curious how you plan to communicate that.
I think that's a valid point, and we'd be more than happy to do that. When Brian and I have been visiting, and what we kind of agreed to try is if we get approval today, we need 2 to 3 months to get our house in order so we'd launch in September. My feeling, my personal feeling, and also as a marketer, I'd rather give customers notice of the increase before it occurs on their bill. Now, that most of the regulation that we're under, whether it be during a rate increase or some other increase to customer bills, most of the time the statute or the law requires notice at the time of for bills rendered on or after. And in this instance, what I'd like to brainstorm with staff and perhaps propose at another meeting to the commission is the rollout plan. You know, how are we going to communicate this to customers? When will we start? How do we handle if we, you know, the other utilities areas, do we don't want to mass advertise because not everybody's doing it yet. I think that's your goal. But I think that would be a reasonable request would be for us, staff and Otter Tail, to come back to you with that rollout plan to say, here's the first communication that we would do, here's what it would look like, here's when it would occur. Because this can be viewed, this can be viewed as a very positive thing handled well, or if not handled well, could backfire on all good intentions on everybody's part. So my sense is we want to think about that and really put together a plan that lays it out for you. My preference would be to have a communication plan before it shows up on customer bills.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay.
Again, I have others, so if I could just get another shot before we take action.
Commissioner Hansen.
I need to take myself off mute. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Peterson, in looking at the information that we have before us, a lot can be said that this is a one-year pilot program, and so we can take some refuge in the fact that we won't be making a terminal mistake here if we for whatever we do. But I think we also have the opportunity to look at what is at the experience in other states, certainly. And I think there's some validity in what your experiences are there, especially in the area of well, there's some concern that this might be a single issue rate making, where there's a potential for certain rate payers in certain classes to benefit substantially over other rate payers in other classes. What has been the experience in other states with that?
I kind of need to answer that in two tracks. To the point of single issue rate making, it's common in other states for these costs to be recovered in one of two rates, either in base rates or through an adjustment factor like the one that has been proposed in South Dakota. The other factor on the benefits is that if the concept of energy efficiency, demand-side management, the reason the utilities advocate for them and are generally supportive of them, particularly demand-side management, is that they lower costs for all customers through reduced capacity purchases, and in this case, reduced energy purchases or reliance on the wholesale market. To the extent that all customers share in that benefit, because all customers are either allocated or pay their share of energy capacity costs, all customers benefit equally, which is why staff and Otter Tail have advocated that the cost per kilowatt hour, the energy adjustment, is equal on a kilowatt hour basis. And the one caveat to that is the people who benefit the most are those that participate. They clearly are the benefactors of this plan, but all customers benefit from reduced capacity and energy requirements. So in summary, the all customers should pay because all customers benefit, but if you really want to benefit, you want to participate.
Thank you. So, in essence, reduced capacity ultimately reduces rates for everyone because it reduces the need for new capacity and reduces peaking demand?
That's true of capacity issues. Most in the plan that you have before you, there is a demand reduction associated with it, approximately half a megawatt. You know, we're looking at 416 kW on peak. So there is a capacity reduction, but the benefit of energy efficiency programs, conservation programs, is really energy-based. And in that extent, we are deferring the need for baseload generation, some would offer. We're deferring or eliminating our need for higher wholesale market purchases because the energy sales is less.
Well, that's a good point.
That's the upside. The downside for the utility is obviously we're selling less, which is why we advocate that we need to be made whole, at least for that loss of sales.
And that gets to the
incentive plan.
Appreciate that. I hadn't thought of the fact that you reduce your wholesale purchases, which are obviously more expensive than your production.
Definitely. Considerably more.
In the application process, the grants program, as I was trying to figure out how public entities would be given preference over private entities. I assume that the cost-benefit ratio information is going to be a part of the application itself, as opposed to going through that after the application has been received. Is the applicant then, therefore, going to be the person who figures out what their cost-benefit ratio is, or is this something that's done after the fact?
I think that's an excellent question and one that we really have to also work through with staff. Brian and I have been discussing the grant program, and I'll be the first one to say we don't have an existing program like this. I am familiar with some programs like it, so I have kind of a template in my mind of how it could work. But it's going to be our first venture into it. As Brian and I have discussed, we're going to want to be crystal clear up front with customers on what the criteria are for the program, so that when we get the applications in, that we're dealing, you know, with fact, and that everybody has an equal shot. Many back and forth conversations have occurred between staff and Ottertail on this issue, and originally the company had some concerns about it, preferential treatment to public entities, because we, back to my original point about making sure that you have equal access for all customers and coverage of all major end uses, your industrial customers have lighting and motors, but they also can benefit greatly from participation in the grant program. Staff, and rightly so, you know, feels that some of the public entities need, you know, additional help and consulting, and that's why they have encouraged us to consider, and we have agreed to give them priority of the grant dollars that are available. I think it'll boil down to a well-developed criteria that's published and documented ahead of time. I think it will be unfair to some customers to expect them to do this alone, because some won't have the resources to do it. Many of our industrial customers have engineering staff on site, and they will understand the concept, but many public entities don't. And I think in that instance, Ottertail will need to assist them in that. For that reason, I'm not confident in the administrative labor associated with the grant project, but I think we're in the ballpark, because we're going to need to handhold with those public entities to help them through the application process. I don't think they will be able to come up with a benefit-cost ratio, because the things that come into the benefit will be our avoided costs, and there's no way they can know that.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to figure out. It seems to be a real guesstimate on one part in order to try to arrive at that, and yet if it's part of the application, I would think that you'd really have to help them through that process.
Yep, we definitely will, because some entities aren't even going to be able to tell us how much energy reduction. Now, what I envision is them coming forward with a proposal that is more driven by, we want to put in an energy management system. We want to put in robotics. We want to put in new computers in the school. And for those types of things, then we would have the data that says, all right, if you have this existing and this is the new, here's the incremental energy savings. Now, we would take that data and then, depending on what it is, match that up against our system load shape and our avoided energy and capacity costs to determine who has the best benefit-cost ratio. I don't think customers, with the exception of a very few, will be able to do that very well. So it's going to be a learning experience, an exciting one, but a tricky one.
I like the exciting part.
Yeah, so do I.
So in looking at the information pertaining to the changes that have been made on hot facts, change light financing, were removed, and the item that we just discussed was added. Primarily, the original application that you presented to us, is that pretty much a mirror image of what you were doing in other states?
Close. It covers all the major end uses, but I would offer that refrigeration, cooking, adjustable speed drives, some of those aren't inherently included in your plan, but we can get at them through the grant program if customers have those kinds of end uses. So it's a smaller portfolio, the original plan that we submitted. I think it covers the majority and major end uses, so I think it's a reasonable first launch for what should be a successful partnership in South Dakota and very defendable.
Great. Were all of the programs that are being introduced, that you had introduced, therefore programs that had been used in other states with the exception of the grants program and the cost-benefit ratio, et cetera, that we just discussed earlier?
Yes, everyone is at, I'm looking at the original portfolio, and with the exception of air conditioning control, all of those programs are at least 10, maybe 15 years in the works in other states we serve, and air conditioning control has been around for 4 or 5 years. So these are proven track record, we know how to do it, customers get it kind of programs.
Including the heat pumps?
Yes.
And has there been a, would you consider the heat pump to have been a program to have been utilized a great deal or not very much? Or?
Geothermal heat pump systems on the commercial sector have been very strong for us, particularly schools. And the residential geothermal is a tougher market because it is they're more expensive. But we have a number of residential geothermal in. Air source heat pump has been an excellent application and I'd say is really catching on in the residential market as well as the commercial market. Both we have pretty high saturations when you talk about the appropriate installation of the technology. You know, for some customers they're just not appropriate, but for other customers they're definitely gaining momentum, and I, as I said before, you know, advocating for that geothermal heat pump. It is the most efficient heating system on the market today. And the air source heat pump has a great application and steadily making improvements in the technology. It used to be that it was only reliable down to 30 or 20 degrees and needed a backup system after that, and, you know, that's considered a balmy winter here in South Dakota, so
sure.
We need something as a backup, but they've made advances in that technology, and our program allows for that modification as well.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Absolutely. I just have the one. I'd like to hear staff. I know Ms. Peterson explained it, but staff, could you give me your thoughts on the having public entities first as far as the grant program?
Yeah, we just kind of wanted an option for mostly schools. We talked to a couple of superintendents that were really interested in this program and wondering how they could possibly get some funds. And so that was kind of the angle we were coming from. But, you know, in discussion with Kim, she also made the point that in most cases, most of those public entities are going to get picked up by the other programs. And so she didn't think the impact on this program would be very high from the public entities.
Do you want me to comment on that, Brian?
Yeah, sure.
It's true that the public entities are going to need lighting and heating systems mostly. They aren't. That's going to be their main concern, and so I wonder if, you know, they won't fit under the other programs like heat pumps and lighting and motors first, because we won't give grants on programs that we have a standard rebate for. So I think that is true. But if I had two concerns, it would be this. One, it's going to be hard for public entities to understand how the grant process works. But it's doable. It's not an impossible thing. It will just require some more time. The thing that I think is most problematic, and we Brian and I talked about this too, is the industrial accounts in the South Dakota area need to have access to programs that fit them, which is why staff agreed that motors and lighting were appropriate. When we talk about who's, you know, the bill impacts, and of course it's all relative, meaning that the higher energy users receive the same rate per kilowatt hour in the rider as a small energy user. But to the extent that the sticker shock is going to be more obvious to your industrial customers, we have to be ready and prepared to answer that question. So if we take Powett Biorefining, which is our largest South Dakota account, and we look at their monthly usage and we calculate the rate per kilowatt hour, you know, they're going to see an increase on their monthly electric bill of roughly $2,900 a month. And the average residential customer using 750 kilowatt hours a month is going to see 50 cents. Now, it's all relative because the rate is the same, but the sticker shock is big. And I want to be ready to say, while it's true that that is an adjustment on your bill, we're excited to tell you that you have the opportunity to participate in all of these programs, and we'll work with you and your facility to help you get the most value out of this plan. So the one concern I have about giving public entities the first step is that issue right there, is all customers are paying a kilowatt hour charge, and for the most part, as Brian said, they're going to come in under our heat pumps, lighting, and motors, and so it will probably all work out just fine. But I want to be ready for that discussion when it occurs.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Johnson?
Yeah, you know, Ms. Peterson, I think on page 15 or 16 of your revised filing, the Energy Connection Program and then additional training workshops for builders, contractors, architects, and suppliers, would you be willing to let the commission know the first couple of times you hold these training sessions? I just, even on a personal basis, I think I might be interested in seeing what that training or what that Energy Connection Program looks like.
Absolutely.
Okay, thanks. And the other two questions I had have already been asked, Mr. Chairman, so I'm done with questions. Thanks.
All right, thank you. Commissioner Hansen, do you have any more questions?
No, I don't. I just wish that I needed to put in a geothermal heat pump right there.
Okay. Action.
Mr. Chairman, I will move in docket EL07-001 that the commission approve the Otter Tail's proposed energy efficiency plan according to staff's recommendations, and I additionally would include Commissioner Johnson, you said 7 was the magic number you were looking at there?
Yes, that's right.
I would include that as well. I think that's a great idea. Did I miss anything with that?
I don't believe so. Discussion?
Oh, forgive me. I thought you were looking for a motion there. Sorry.
I was assuming that was your motion.
All right.
And hearing the motion, we'll have discussion. I'd like to discuss, I guess, the public entities versus commercial preference. I've got a little few concerns. I guess I'd like to hear if my fellow commissioners had any.
I mean, I'm not going to pitch a fit about it. I mean, it is open to private entities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it wouldn't surprise me if we don't get a tremendous amount of demand on the public side. And if that's the case, then the private sectors are going to be able to qualify. As long as that door is open, I don't have a huge problem. But the reason I do think it's important is that I just think you increasingly read about, you know, intense competition nationally, globally, and energy prices are, I mean, they're in some countries they don't have quite the same regulatory and environmental regime we do, and as a result energy prices are quite a little bit different than I think what we can expect them to be in the future here in this country. So I like the idea of helping give manufacturing plants in South Dakota another tool to compete globally. But that being said, this is, it's been said before, and I think it's probably accurate. This is a pilot program. You know, by taking care of schools, you take care of all taxpayers, and that's a good thing. So to your question, Commissioner Kolbeck, I'm not comfortable, I'm at least accepting of what staff and the applicant have come to on that.
And that's kind of my feeling, too. I know I hate to give preferential treatment to anyone, even though it is a public entity, but I do understand the reasoning of it. And as you say, it is a pilot. We can always, is this something that, I guess in 2010 we could look back and reevaluate and see how many applications had come in and go from there. Are you comfortable with that, Commissioner Hansen?
Yes, absolutely. It's based upon some good sound theory, and certainly not just theory. There's precedent in a variety of utility matters, whether it's water or electric, where certain preferences are given to and incentivizations are given to public entities in order for the entire public good to benefit, as opposed to just allowing it in certain sectors. But I appreciate very much the challenge of going through it and making certain that it will work and that there's opportunity to actually go through the process. We don't want to make it so complicated or challenging that entities don't want to pursue it. At the same time, I don't think that's the case here at all, and I think that there's great opportunity for private sector as well as public, but I'm very comfortable with it.
All right. I will not amend the motion then. Any other discussion? Hearing none, Commissioner Johnson. I'm sorry.
Commissioner Hansen, looked like you wanted in as well.
You've got tremendous eyesight. I was just going to say that this does look like quite an ambitious program. I am very excited about it. I think it's something that I would have liked to have seen 10 years ago in South Dakota. I agree with Ms. Peterson that this is an exciting program, and it's exciting in a number of directions, both from its challenges as well as its opportunities. And looking at the information that we've had an opportunity to preview from staff and as well as from the utility, that there is a real potential here for tremendous benefits, and not just in the sector of saving well over $1 million to the customers, as well as the environmental aspects as well. We have discussed many times on a national basis the advantages of efficiency and the costs of continuing to build more and more capacity, which we're going to have to do anyway, but there's some real, real benefits here. This is a tremendous opportunity. I'm very, very happy to see it come forth in South Dakota, and I truly appreciate the amount of work that staff went through, and certainly from Otter Tail standpoint, the cooperation, the work that they went through with staff. Obviously, staff did a considerable amount of work with this, and I appreciate both of the folks working so well together. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Mr. Johnson.
Yeah, I have a couple of things I think are going to cause me to be supportive of this. The first is the cost. I mean, I think if I did my math right, we're talking about 63 thousandths of a cent per kilowatt hour. Is that right? I mean, 63 thousandths of a cent. Now, I know any tax or any rider of any size can affect consumer behavior and can have an impact on, you know, families and businesses, which brings me to point two, and that is the cost-benefit analysis test. And I think if what stands out for me is that if this program functions as we hope it does, that it will lower costs even for non-participants. And I think that is, you know, if we want to stay focused on safe, reliable, and affordable utilities, doing things that will help all ratepayers, I think, is obviously good news. We talked a lot the last time we met about the incentive, and I think the incentive as it's structured now, I think, hopefully provides a fair amount of comfort to folks. I know there's been a lot of discussion about this, and I think the end result is pretty good. If Otter Tail meets 120% of their savings goal, and that's almost $1.4 million in benefits achieved, $1.4 million, they get a bonus of $18,000, almost $19,000. And so I certainly don't think the incentive is too much. And I think, you know, let's see how well this program performs. And then finally, I just get to the purpose. And I think sometimes people, maybe even particularly in other states, talk about energy efficiency in terms of a social program or in terms of environmental benefits. And if that was the main purpose of this program, I don't think I'd find myself as supportive. I just don't think the core role of the commission is as a social agency or even as an environmental protection agency. The reason I'm supportive of this is because it fits in the core competency of the commission: safe, reliable, and affordable utilities. And if you view energy efficiency as resource adequacy, as a fifth fuel, as part of generation diversity, I think this is very, very cheap power. And something like 60 power plants, coal power plants, have been canceled the last 2 years. I don't know where we're getting the next megawatt in this country. I checked the prices this morning at the Henry Hub. I think natural gas is $11. Well, how much longer is per decatherm? I mean, how much longer is natural gas going to continue to be part of that safe, reliable, and affordable, generation? Clearly, nuclear power, is not going to be coming online anytime real soon. And so for me, the question is, where do we get our megawatts in the future? And I think we've got to start looking increasingly toward that fifth fuel, energy efficiency, to help us keep the lights on. And I think when I view it that way, as a basic part of resource planning, of resource adequacy, this is very inexpensive. I think most studies say that energy efficiency can meet load demands at half the cost of new generation. And so with that, Mr. Chairman, I'm excited about this. I will tell you, if it was just me, if I was the master of the universe, I probably wouldn't have made some of the changes that we've seen happen in the last couple of months with this. Lighting, I think, is fine. I can see why lighting is taken out. But to a certain extent, I feel like, you know, maybe we should have given Otter Tail even a little bit more of an opportunity to try to implement the program they envision, give them an opportunity to succeed or fail. But that being said, the staff members who worked on this, frankly, are a heck of a lot smarter than I am individually, and collectively they blow me out of the water. And I think they've also brought Otter Tail to the table. People are in agreement with this. I'm not going to slow this process down anymore by asking for additional revisions. And so with that, I do expect to be supportive of Commissioner Hansen's motion as made.
Thank you, Commissioner Johnson, and thank you to Ms. Peterson. It's always nice to work with someone who is so informed as you and staff also. Any further discussion? Hearing none, Commissioner Johnson.
I vote aye.
Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
Commissioner Kovac votes aye also. Announcements. That concludes our agenda. The next regularly scheduled commission meeting will be held June 10th, 2008 at 9:30 in room 464 of the State Capitol. Commission meetings are scheduled for June 24th and July 8th of 2008. The Public Utilities Commission offices will be closed on Monday, May 26th, in observance of Memorial Day. Commissioners and staff will be attending Mid-Mark in Oklahoma City on June 14th through the 18th. And the commission staff offices will be closed on July 4th in observance of Independence Day. And the flavor of the day at Zesto is coconut. Any other business before the commission? Hearing none, we're adjourned. Thank you.